Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello and welcome back to the Sunday Podcast, presented by SportsShoes.com. I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
We are back for Season 3 and it's going to be a good one.
With the aim of raising the profile of British distance running, we're bringing you more content than ever.
Every week, we'll give you insights into the lives and training of some of the UK's top athletes and coaches.
As well as all the latest updates from the races up and down the country and around the world.
You can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify and all major podcast streaming platforms.
Keep a lookout for our new YouTube channel too, where we're posting workout videos, shoe reviews and much more.
Stay up to date by following us on Twitter and Instagram at Sunday Podcast.
And if you want to drop us a line, send us an email to info@sundaypodcast.com.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoy the episode. For this week's podcast, we spoke to European under 23 silver medalist and 144 800 meter man, Ethan Hussey. Enjoy.
Okay, first off, Ethan, welcome to the podcast. Great to have you on.
Cheers, mate. Thanks very much for the invite.
Yeah, not at all. Look, what a season you've had already. Sort of 144 silver at your under 23s. Is that everything you kind of wanted going into this season?
Yeah. I mean, if you told me that last season, I'd be very happy with it. But now, obviously, we're in the season. Euros was a little disappointing. Just because the way I ran the race was silly, you know, it could have easily been a gold, but it also could have easily been a bronze. Happy with 144.9, but obviously just outside the Olympic qual time. So obviously want to get that as soon as possible, really. But obviously then knowing that next year I still have to run the time again just to show form and stuff. So I mean the season's far from done. Hopefully, so hopefully some more races and get quicker. And I mean, I've still got unfinished business over the 1500 as well. So hopefully we can get a couple of races over the 15 and then see what I could do over that.
That's something we'll probably touch on later. Are you an 8 runner or are you a 15 runner? But yeah, you mentioned, you know, before the season, you'd be happy with these goals. What were the goals, you know, pre this year?
I mean, going into every season, we like to keep it as simple as possible within the team. So it's just as run as fast as you can and as win as much as you can. It's just keeping it quite simple, and obviously I have my own little goals myself. So going to Euros is obviously to medal off the back of the Worlds last year, wanting to medal again after stepping up to a new age group, and then just kind of just trying to navigate the transition from junior to senior level quite successfully, which I feel like I've done. But obviously staying at the senior level now, being up there with the top guys, is obviously going to be tough. Obviously, as we've seen this year, a lot of guys are getting very quick. So it's just making sure I don't get left behind, especially going into Paris next year.
I don't think you're left behind at all, mate. I mean, were you surprised? What did you have? 5 or 6 times 145 or quicker this year already? Were you surprised by that?
I don't quite know if I was surprised by it, but I knew how training was going, especially in my South Africa training camp in about April time. I knew I'd go quick. Obviously, 144 is quick, but you got to get quicker now. You got to stay quicker. It's 144. A lot of people are doing it, and this year I didn't expect it to be like this. So yeah, no, it's time to step it up again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting point because obviously the time is there, and like you say, at the start of the season, you probably take that 144.9, but then the race you run it in, it's all other Brits doing very similar. So it almost moves the goalposts, I guess.
Yeah, massively. And obviously when I ran 45.0 in Germany, I was in the B race. I pretty much ran the last 200 on my own. It was a bit annoying because I tried to get in the A race, but they were like, no, we're having two A races. So I was like, okay, fair enough. So I just did what I needed to do. I just made sure I set myself up for a 600. But obviously, you can't really push yourself too much on your own. So then I thought London would be a great opportunity. But obviously, external factors happened and it was a bit messy to start with. And I got a bit caught up in all the carnage at 200, which definitely hindered my race. But I mean, I still ran 44.9, so I can't really complain too much. So, but it's definitely encouraging to know that I can go quicker, knowing if I get a clean race. But you can't always expect a clean race nowadays, can you?
No, you can't. And but talk about, you know, last season, that bronze medal at the World Junior Champs, did that make you think through the winter, right, we're going to fully focus on the 800? Because before that, I would say you were very much, you perhaps even predominantly more of a 1500 guy.
Yeah, I mean, last season was a weird one because there's a lot of problems that went on in that season. I came back from South Africa with a few medical issues. I think I definitely or more than likely got COVID coming back. So I spent a lot of time across the MIP in Manchester, just doing a lot of tests, struggling to train, struggling to race, just not feeling good. Had a complete shocker at British Champs, finished last in my heat, way off the back, I'm pretty sure. So it wasn't really looking like the greatest of seasons. Like I was struggling a lot. And then, but I knew I had time on my side going to World Juniors, obviously with it being late August or start of August, sorry. So yeah, I mean, time was on my side. And then we didn't expect to actually do the double. We didn't really anticipate it. Obviously the main goal was the 15. But then through struggling in training and stuff, we did a couple of 800s ago just because, I mean, with breathing and stuff, I couldn't really get through a 15. So we did a couple of eights and we knocked out some decent times. Obviously, it was nothing crazy, but it was obviously qualifying times for World Juniors and stuff. And then obviously upon selection, they offered me to do the double. And I was like, yeah, nothing to lose. It doesn't really mess up the 15. So I was like, well, let's just see what happens. And like after the 15, I can always make a decision whether or not I actually want to do the eight. So yeah, but I mean, as the competition went on, the stronger I felt I got, really. So yeah.
Do you have a preferred event out of the two?
No,
not at all. So
it's interesting though, because that competition, sorry, Lam, that competition was at altitude and you said you were struggling with breathing and you felt stronger as the competition went on.
Yeah. I feel like it's probably because it obviously when I went to South Africa on the last camp, it was April and obviously to August, it's quite a lot of times. I feel like the time was on my side, like I said, and it gave me time to recover, sort things out, give me the time to kind of get everything diagnosed and just do the right things and also just kind of not panic as well.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
And then got that bronze medal and then went into the winter. Yeah, like I said, I asked you that question before. Was it then, right, we're going to focus on the 800 now?
No, actually, surprisingly not. Obviously, we still tried to keep a range there, obviously, because, I mean, growing up, I've always been able to have a strong range from 8 all the way up to, say, 5K back in 2019 when I ran 14.29 when I was 16, I think I was. So it's always been important as a training philosophy to keep a range there, especially now with the way the 800 and the 1500 are progressing, it's important to have range. So we tried to keep that there. But there was never any specifics as to which event we'd target going into the season. We just wanted to do both. But I'm assuming a lot of athletes have experienced getting into races this year has been quite difficult. And obviously performing well in the 800 last year with the medal, it allowed me to get into some better eight races.
Right.
So it kind of just, that's just how the cookie crumbled. And I just ended up doing a lot more eight races this year. And obviously I performed very well. And it kind of was like, right, well, you're getting quicker. You're training really well. Like you've potentially, obviously Worlds potentially was on the cards running 5.0. It's like, do you want to just concentrate for eights for the rest of the season and just see what happens going into champs? And that's what we did, really. I mean, we did try to do the 15 going into under 23s, but there was a bit of a problem in one of my races in Geneva, in that I had to be, well, I was in a B race when I should have been in the A race, and I won the race by 150 meters. So I didn't get a chance to really run a 15 yet this season. So I was, it kind of forced my hand into doing the 800 under 23 champs, which obviously not complain. I came out of there with a winning in a great field, but we would have liked to have the opportunity to have the decision as to whether we could do the 8 or the 15, or even potentially double if that was on the cards again, because I did enjoy the double at Worlds.
What does that mean for Paris next year? Do you see yourself, I guess you're so close to the 800 time, but in terms of your kind of inner belief, do you believe you can just go around that 15 time with the opportunities?
I guess time will tell. I mean, I know I can do a good 15, but as we've seen this year, unless you're running low 330, if not sub 330, especially in this country, you're going to be struggling to make a 15 team. So, I mean, we'll see what, if I could get some 15s this year. I know I could go quick. How quick, I don't know. I guess I'll find out. But if not, if I don't get as quick as I want this year, I obviously know there's definitely time next year. So it's, I guess we'll still continue to do both. And when I say we, it'll be a decision between myself and my coach. We'll obviously try to do both. So yeah, I mean, there's a concentration there to do both.
I'm intrigued to know if training, you know, you said you cookie crumbled, you found yourself doing eights after eights after eights. Did training change at all? Did you have to then just be like, well, we've got to start tailoring this, you know, make it a lot more 800 focus, or did it kind of remain the same?
In complete honesty, I don't know. Mainly because it's like I've got a massive trust within my coach, Andy, here at Leeds. I've been with him for all my athletic career, which has been a long time, considering I'm only 20. So I kind of just see what's on training, turn up, and I just do it. I don't really ask questions. I kind of just do what I'm told because I know it works. And we kind of obviously set the goals for the season. So then we're like, right, well, I know I'll get to my goal. And I know, put myself on the start line, I know I'll be in the best shape possible to do what I want to do. So I kind of just put the trust in my coach, and yeah, I just let him do what's best. Really.
Yeah. Let's talk about our relationship with your coach, Andy Henderson. Then. So obviously we've had him on the podcast. He has a massive role at Leeds Beckett, but like you mentioned, you're someone who's been with him for a long time, and clearly from a young age, you've been a very talented athlete, but the way he's kind of managed to nurture that talent is really impressive. Like when you kind of first meet him, how old were you then?
I want to say eight.
Wow.
Eight, maybe nine. Yeah. It's been that long. Yeah. And we always like to joke about it and stuff, but yeah, it's been a long time. So yeah.
in what circumstance did you meet? You just went down to the club?
So not the club actually. Obviously because we're based up at the university. I haven't trained with Leeds City. That's nothing against Leeds City, by the way. Great club. But just because when my dad was an athlete, he was based up at Leeds Beckett, and we knew, it wasn't Leeds Beckett back then. But my dad just knew people here, and I just came up and then, yeah, just joined within the group and started training. Obviously, at the time, there was a couple of other kids like around my age that were around, and then I kind of just progressed through the group, really.
Like the setup at Leeds Uni doesn't strike me as one which takes on too many youngsters, and you know, maybe it takes on a few, you know, I don't know, under-15s, but definitely not, you know, 9-10 year olds. So
yeah,
I mean, like a few times going down there.
Yeah, I mean, to start with, obviously it wasn't like having direct contact with Hendo like all the time. There was obviously like input within training, and then obviously as I've got better, there's obviously got better at a younger age. It was like, okay, like I need better people to train with, integrate me more within the university group. It was just more like progression within the group. And obviously then it came to, I'm trying to think now when it was, probably 2016. Yeah, when it kind of just became more serious in my mind, kind of to go down the route of athletics, because I was playing rugby a lot. And obviously then it became a decision as to which sport I wanted to do. And then, yeah, it just became a lot serious from there. And it's been great, obviously, being up at Beckett, because the amount of athletes it's produced, regardless of like outside of middle distance running, obviously you've got triathlon with all the Brownlee brothers, Alex Shee for a period of time, And then with like outside of our group, obviously you've got Laura Waitman around, within our group, Alex Bell. So there's always people there. And like, aside from obviously your top high level elite athletes, you've just got great guys within the group. Obviously with me coming through at a university level that have, kind of helped me along the way, taught me a lot of lessons, helped me and kind of progress through the ranks and given me a lot of experience. So it's all been very valuable.
Have you always had that kind of high performance mentality yourself, but also those around you, you know, your dad, Andy Henderson, because obviously you were involved in the sport at a young age, but you were also very, very good at a young age. So was there always a long-term goal, or were you taking it year by year?
I mean, I knew from a young age that I wanted to do sport. Loved it. I was sport mad. I feel like obviously every young person is to an extent, but I'd probably like to say I was next level mad on sport. Loved it. Just lived and breathed it, really. And obviously my sister was a good level athlete as well, a young age. So there's always that sibling rivalry there as a kid. So yeah, it was kind of just through that, really. And then obviously dad, again, was kind of like me when he was a kid, did every single sport and was very good at it. So he kind of knew kind of what it takes. And then in later life, he was around professional rugby a lot within coaching setup. So he kind of knew what it took to get to a high level. So yeah, I kind of had, but I've always had very good people around me to guide me along the way.
Was that decision to kind of just choose athletics, was that difficult, or was it always the obvious choice for you?
Yeah, it was difficult. I mean, I kind of put the decision off for a long time, but I think I got a bit of like a rugby niggle. So I could carry on playing rugby, but I couldn't train for athletics. And at that point, I was like, I actually want to go to athletics training more than rugby training. Mm-hmm. At that point, I was like, okay, where's my decision made?
What did you prefer about athletics that you weren't getting in rugby?
I actually don't know, to be honest, because still to this day, I love rugby. I still wish I could play it. Even when I was at high school and sixth form and stuff, I'd still try and play as much as I could. So I do enjoy it. I don't know. I feel like the individual sport side to it is very, as I enjoy it a lot, being solely responsible for everything myself. Obviously being the main driver behind the mentality side, being the one solely responsible for training, making it to the top. I kind of enjoyed that and taking on that responsibility.
Yeah. And let's chat about how your kind of relationship with Andy's evolved over the years, because it's been that must be 12 years then since you first met him. Like, how has it changed?
It's only changed in the sense that it's grown stronger and stronger each year, to not just a simple coach relationship to someone who is very significant in my life at this point, not just a coach, but also as like a father figure, you know, someone you can know, you can talk to and trust. And that's, again, taking nothing away from my own dad, but you just know that like, it's someone else you can trust. It's someone else you can put faith in. That's always going to be there for you no matter what. And everyone knows that, and he'll always go that extra mile for not just me, but just any athlete he coaches in general. And I feel like that's kind of what sets him aside to probably anyone else, really, is that like, no matter who you are within the group, he'll always go that extra mile for you.
Something that is quite interesting to me is obviously there's been a bit of drama this week around, you know, Alex not getting selected and stuff. Do you see that affect Andy, you know, your coach? Because surely he is only human and he coaches so many very high-class athletes. Does a disappointing, you know, outcome with one athlete ever kind of affect you or others?
I mean, obviously he's emotional for us all. So obviously I'm sure he's very gutted and disappointed with circumstances that has gone on. And obviously he has a right to be at the day. He's Alex's coach. So he's going to feel very involved in the decision behind it, and it will feel the burden just as much as Alex. And again, I can't talk to how he'll use this, but I'm sure he'll use it as fuel and motivation for, say, Paris next year, making sure that we do, me, Alex, and say others in the group, perform very well. And he'll put it, yeah, he's very meticulous like that, and he'll use it in the right way to drive and motivate him as a coach, and use it as well to kind of help us in a way, and not have it and use it as something that will keep us down as athletes, but instead pick us up and motivate us and both of us.
It definitely looks like that from the outside in. I think there was one story I heard about you is obviously a couple of years ago, probably now, you had the opportunity. Well, did you have the opportunity to go to Oregon? I think you did, from what I've heard as well. And obviously, I think that shows the trust and how much you value Andy Henderson as your coach, that you definitely kind of turned down Oregon and other American unis.
Yeah, so I turned down going to the collegiate system, and obviously Oregon was one of them. I mean, growing up as a kid, through my sister, really, she introduced me to Pre, the film Without Limits, obviously the film about Pre, at quite a young age, and it kind of brought on the obsession of Nike and just that whole ethos of just unbelievable running. And I always said, back then, very naively, I said the only like university in America I would even consider is Oregon, just because of the history, just because it is the mecca of college, university sport, or even just athletics in general. Me naively thinking that would never be a possibility. And it ended up being a possibility. Obviously, I turned down numerous other great universities as well. But Oregon was, at the time, was the only one that I generally did consider. And it was a very, very hard decision. Multiple times the decision was delayed because I still hadn't come to a decision. Because that's how hard it was, because it was almost a dream to kind of go there. But then it wasn't, at the time, the best decision for me to go there, of because I've been grateful enough in the fact that I've been supported from a young age through funding systems, whether it be England Athletics and the Talent Hubs, or now through British Athletic Futures. And I've got a great coaching setup here, obviously, with facilities and stuff. So I kind of wouldn't really have gained anything different in America apart from simply just a new training environment and a new coach. And at the time, obviously, me and Hendo can talk quite honestly with each other. He knew that obviously the chances of losing me to America was quite high, just because obviously the money involved with going to America is quite eye-opening for, say, a 16-year-old me at the time. So he knew that was a possibility, but he also trusted me in the fact that he knew that I had, what I had here was unbelievable. So I ultimately made the decision to stay here. It's a decision I don't regret at all, because obviously I've gone on to do such great things here with Hendo, and I want to continue to do great things here. So yeah, it was great, because I mean, it was just a simple saying, as don't change what's not broken, really.
Mm.
It just simply came down to that.
Yeah, and it sounds like, just a, like you say, you're probably, what, 16 making the decision. That is such a mature decision to make at that age. And obviously now you've seen the benefits. So what advice would you give to maybe other people going through that kind of decision now, thinking about the NCAA, or even people maybe who are even at smaller training setups in the UK that are thinking maybe they want to go off to a Birmingham, a Leeds, for example, but actually they're having success at home. So you don't need to always do that.
Yeah, I mean, it probably just comes down to each individual person, to be honest, because I think, like I said, I was very lucky in that I already had a lot of support around me. And obviously I don't think a lot of people have that offer that I had in terms of staying here and knowing that it would be just as good as, say, going to America. So I can appreciate that I was in quite a unique position at that point. So I feel like everyone kind of has to stay within an open mind of it, because obviously you've got Josh Kerr, who went out to America, and Neil Gawley, who went out to America, who we all know have gone to do great things in their career. But then, say, Jake Whiteman, he stayed within the UK with his dad, Jeff, as his coach, and again was going to be world champion. So it's just making the decision at the time what's right for you, and just keep all options open, really, because the universities in the UK are great. Okay, yeah, there might not be the bright flashing lights of America, but it's just ultimately doing what's right for you.
And probably safe to say you've got a world-class setup right now.
Yeah, it is world-class. It's great. Leeds is an unbelievable place to train. And it's regardless of obviously the facilities here, Leeds, it's on the doorstep to obviously great trails. You can get out of the city a lot. And again, if you need to kind of get out of Leeds and just pop down to say Loughborough or something like that, it's down the road. It's not far. So again, it's a great place. It's quite linked in. And then everyone here is obviously willing to help out where they can. So if you're a middle distance runner or within one group, you can easily tap in and say, jump in with the Brownlees if training works. So no one is really like segregated. Everyone's quite together and willing to help each other because you've all got the same goal in mind. So as long as you all have the same goal in mind on the same path, there's no reason why you all can't interlink and help each other out at points.
I think one perk as well, you staying at home, it's allowed you to race on the European circuit at a very young age and gain that experience as well. And that's something you would have had to wait several years to do.
Yeah, and I can truthfully say that was obviously quite a big decision for me as a factor, was being able to have freedom in how I'd like to race and how I'd like to go about my own career. I knew that if I was going to go into an American system, I knew I wouldn't 100% buy into the NCAA system of racing, like obviously through regionals, nationals, and stuff like that. I kind of wanted my own free will as to kind of how I wanted to race and have that decision left to me and kind of pick and choose what's best for me, really. So yeah, it was kind of just what I wanted, the freedom to be able to do what I wanted, knowing what's best for me. And I feel like America seems to be one of those decisions that if you're not 100% committed and buying into it, you're not going to reap the reward from it. And I knew here that I'm already bought into the Leeds way because I've been part of it for a long time. So I knew what I was going to get from it, really.
Yeah, and obviously it meant you were able to get your Nike contract as well. How old were you when you signed that?
So I was supported by Nike for a long time, held out for them, and I've been contracted now a couple years. Yeah. So again, that was also a big decision as well that kind of led to not going to America, was having that relationship with Nike, which has been great. You know, signing with them has been really good for me. You know, they've treated me well, very, very best brand to probably be with, realistically. The support they continue to give is immense. So yeah, no, they've definitely supported me in a big way.
Yeah, and with that support, what does kind of your day-to-day life look like, kind of training, chilling out? What are you doing kind of on a week-by-week basis?
I mean, at the moment, it's just simply chilling out, resting, recovering between sessions, and trying to find ways to fill my day, obviously with it not being university at the moment. But I mean, it depends. Once I'm in university, it's a bit more trickier to juggle. But if you keep like lines of communication open with, say, the right people that you need to be in communication with at university and how to balance the training, it's very much doable and very much workable. So yeah, it's just having open lines of communication and making sure everyone's on the same page and knows what the goals are and what periods of time are going to be quite busy in terms of obviously training, racing, and trying to juggle assessments and exams and the rest of that. So I guess that's obviously great. Another thing about Beckett, Leeds Beckett as well, is that obviously everyone's there willing to help and will do what they can to make sure that me as the athlete or another athlete can succeed in what their main goal is. Because I mean, it's obvious that the main goal is obviously to make the Olympics, be an athlete, and the degree is alongside that, not necessarily above above or below athletics, but kind of on par, even though realistically the athletics will be the most important bit. So it's just how to make like exams and lectures go in alongside training.
This might sound stupid, but how do you block out the noise? Like, obviously you were a very successful junior, and I'm just certain, and I think even now, like every time you step on a start line, there is a little bit of pressure because people are almost waiting for you to do something big. I think you are living up to that. You're filling those shoes very well, but I'm sure, you know, in your career up to this point, you've had a lot of people say things about you, maybe say that, oh, he's, you know, training too hard, you know, three times English school champion, stuff like that. How do you block all that noise out? Even at uni, like I can imagine people say, oh, you need to enjoy the uni experience, stuff like that. And you strike me as someone who is very much a full-time athlete, uni comes second. But
yeah, I mean, obviously younger, you obviously get the comments of, oh, don't worry about him, he's going to burn out, he's not going to be around for much longer. I used it, I was able to use it as a way to not affect me and use it as a way to kind of prove people wrong. And obviously there's no better way of reacting to something like that than proving someone wrong rather than through words but actions. And obviously people were saying, obviously I was performing very well at a young age. I'm still performing now at 20. And that's not to say, obviously, like I've now proved them wrong, because I'd most definitely haven't. It's still then going on now for the next 10 years or so and becoming hopefully one of the best athletes in the world, you know, getting onto that senior level and winning medals. Now I've done it at junior level. So for me now it's time to step up to the senior level and get medals on there. But yeah, I mean, it's just using it to my own advantage. And yeah, I can say that the pressure doesn't normally get to me, but I can honestly and openly say that the pressure of British champs this year definitely got to me. I can openly honestly say that, because it's kind of a massive learning curve. Obviously, arriving on the Saturday, getting handed that red bib was daunting and quite shocking. I did ask the woman if she could change it. because obviously last year, you know, bombing out of the heats, knowing full well that I was easily capable of holding myself in my own heat and potentially getting to that 1500 final, to having the red bib, but not necessarily being the favorite, but having that red bib, it's quite hard, especially at being only 20. And it's something that I've not quite experienced before. So yeah, it's kind of like now it's small fish, big pond situation. But yeah, no, definitely not. I know how to like now navigate it, because it's end of the day, it's only another race. Obviously the stakes are a lot higher, but it's just another race. And it's just learning, it's just using it as a learning curve. And then I'd prefer it happen this year than say next year.
Yeah, you're an interesting stage. And I think you mentioned right at the start of the podcast that you're still trying to work out how you transition into a good senior. I guess, what does success look like now for you? Because you've had success on that junior level. The next stage, I guess, is the medals, but they might not necessarily come straight away on the senior stage. So how do you kind of set those goals intermediately, before you're maybe ready to kind of medal on the world level?
It's just keeping things simple. As silly as it sounds, it's just going back to the simple saying of run fast and win. If you just go into a race with that kind of mentality, you don't really set yourself up for any disappointments, really. Because if you win and get in, and you're winning in the right races, the time will come. And I know once this podcast goes out, there'll be people that listen to this and be like, Ethan, like, whenever we say this to you, you fight back against it. And I'm a bit hypocritical in that way, but I do know like the value that of like that saying is worth. But at the time, obviously, you know, you do want everything there and now. Because I mean, I didn't exactly want to put a focus on another 23s. I kind of wanted to go all in for Worlds this year. That's just simply me just getting slightly carried away. And again, having a good, knowledgeable people behind me, like my coach and my dad, was like, look, we know you want to do that. We all want to do that. We all want to see you do that. But under 23s is still on the cards. Like, you can still go and win there and still potentially go and make a Worlds team. There's nothing stopping that from happening. And obviously myself, my dad, my coach and all my team are keen on going through this, like the stepping stone of the age groups, because it's a good learning curve. Because like this year, obviously the disappointment of British champs was massive for me. And then obviously having to fly out to Finland 2 days later, going straight into a competition within a week, within 5 days of having another major final in my career within the next week, was key to see how I'd deal with it. And I dealt with it very well, actually, because I think the disappointment of British champs settled me. It relaxed me a lot more. I wasn't really thinking about it, because I was obviously still thinking about British champs, because I was still quite upset of my performance there. But it kind of just allow me to like, know what, just you need to learn how to relax a bit more in like a higher stakes race. Because I mean, I can go to Worlds last year. No one kind of really expected me to medal in the 800, especially after all the rounds and stuff. But then, so it's kind of a bit like an underdog performance that I came out of there with a medal. I mean, we knew it was the possibility was on the cards, but there was no like external thoughts that I would go and medal. Whereas, say, with under 23s this year, there was the very realistic opportunity to go and win it, if not medal, like I have done. So it's just learning how to deal with stuff like that, and especially off the back of a champs. That was disappointing.
Interesting, you have that, I guess, not a confrontation, but you know, there's decisions that need to be made. Is it important? Yeah, who makes that final decision? Do you still value, you know, your coach, Andy Henderson? Is he the boss?
Yeah,
he's the boss, he makes the final decisions.
He's the boss, man. I listen to him. He's like, oh, what do you want to do with this? Like, do you want to do this or that? And I'm like, just tell me and I'll do it. Just don't kind of leave the option, don't leave it up to me. Just tell me. Like, say, I don't know, even simple stuff to come down to training. Say it's like, oh, 6 to 8 reps. I'm like, no, if it's 6, tell me. If it's 8, tell me. Tell me what to do and I'll get it done. I like to think I don't moan much with training. I kind of just come up and crack on because I know the benefits of just getting it done. But obviously I will have a moan, especially in winter.
Yeah. Okay, on winter then, what does a typical kind of winter's training week look like? And then maybe what does training look like for you now?
Winter, I feel like it's very, very generic. It's just base mileage, getting in your 3 key sessions within a week. So that'll be Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. Thursday will be vary between tempo and hill sessions. Sometimes it might be a small tempo at the start, then you'll go on to hills. It can vary. Track session Tuesday, so that'll be around 5-6K volume. And then Saturday, it'll just be a staple grass session. I don't think we do. I think it's obvious that obviously everyone knows we're not really doing anything too special. Mm. You know, it's just making sure, because getting a full winter and making sure I can crank through the session, say like a long Tuesday track session or a 30-minute volume grass session on a Saturday, make sure I can put them all together, and then obviously topping that up with some easy mileage during the week, and obviously ending off with a long run on a Sunday. So it's just, that's just kind of making sure we can actually get through them first before we can kind of potentially start throwing in some different curveballs into training. It's just getting the basics nailed first, which I've still not done. You know, there's still some weeks where it's like, right, here's the next 4-week training block. Can you get through this next 4 weeks? And we're getting there. There's obviously some bits where we have to tailor because I'm a bit tired and whatnot. So, yeah, I think my problem is probably definitely previously I've enjoyed the gym training too much and I get a bit carried away in the gym. So it does leave me with a bit tired on the Tuesday and Thursday sessions. But I mean, again, I still get the reward from that, obviously, massively, because, yeah, I mean, everyone knows that the S&C is obviously a massive importance to getting stronger, faster, fitter, and just having longevity in the sport as well.
Mm. Yeah, that's where you get your speed from. My next question was going to be, you know, do you train speed? Is this something you're kind of just naturally gifted with?
My mum takes claim for my speed. The genetics of being from the Caribbean, Trinidad and Tobago. So he likes to take claim for that. I guess I've always been born with my speeds. I've always been quick. But I mean, you obviously have to work on it a little bit. You can't just completely neglect it. But no, we do work on it. It's like, say, we'll always keep it. We'll keep in touch with it. We won't just forget about it. But definitely come after, like, say, Christmas time, we will tap into it a little bit after a track session on a Tuesday. It's like, right, put your spikes on, you've got some 200s now, just to get the legs going a little bit. Or on like a Wednesday after a gym session in the afternoon, we'll do some like drills, hurdle drills and stuff like that. And then we're like, right, here's some like flying 30s, flying 40s, just to kind of get the legs moving again. But obviously that wouldn't really come in towards like the back end of winter, like start of summer season, really. So yeah, but then even like throughout summer, there's no like out and out speed work, really. It's just more like lactic stuff, really. Just making sure I'm at one with lactic and I can deal with it quite well. So
yeah, for those lactic sessions, is there one session that you sort of go to that tells you, look, I'm in really good shape now?
It's more just like the specific eight sessions, really, like split eights. Yeah, I mean, the one we like to do a lot is, it's not necessarily like an eight session. It's more just, it's 6 500s off 6 minutes. They're kind of starting off at 15 pace, see if you can get quicker. Or if you say the first time we're doing it, it's, can you hit 15 pace for all of it? Obviously, then it's just like slowly transitioning throughout the season and getting quicker and quicker throughout it. Or then it's just, say like a, like some 200s, whether it be a short recovery or long recovery, and say chucking a mile tempo in to start with, so keeping that strength there and then hitting a bit of lactic towards the end. So I wouldn't say there's any like staple sessions. We kind of change it up a little bit.
Well, look, let's finish podcast. Where can we see you next? Because it's a weird time of year for someone like yourself. I guess you've had your biggest run outs of the year, and now it's just going to be a case of getting a bit of experience in, you know, on the circuit and stuff. So do you have much of a calendar lined up?
Obviously, I'm racing on Friday in Bern, Switzerland, over an 800. And obviously, you kind of go into a bit of a dip in races with Worlds. So it's kind of just finding, just taking what we can, really, from there, and trying to find some 15s. There's been some talk of finding a 400, which is, it's pushed by me. I want to do 400s. Yeah, just rustle some feathers, maybe see what I can do. Just as a bit of fun as well. Just trying to like, obviously pull it back to like just enjoying it as well. Not putting too much, obviously, because obviously you want to go run the Olympic time now that the window's open, but just not putting too much focus on there. Like if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it'll come next year without a doubt. So it's just trying to have some fun, say going and doing a 400 at a local meet, open meet somewhere.
Any predictions?
I don't know. I'd realistically, I'd take a 47 low. I could be way out my depth saying that, but I feel like it could happen. Not first out. I'd have to do a couple first because obviously brand new event. But yeah, I feel like it could happen.
Wow. And then, you know, on predictions, actually, you know, this will come out probably the week before Worlds or something like that. So any predictions on Worlds, how those GB boys going to go, you know, through the season? Have you seen someone on the Diamond League circuit you think, man, they look too good?
Look, you've got the Algerian boys, Sajati and Mula, that are running really well. That last 50 meters from them two boys is unbelievable. You know, if they're there, the last 50 meters, they're dangerous. Got the Kenyans, Wanyonyi and Kinyamal, obviously now fastest in a year, fastest this year. But I mean, look, the slowest Brit going there is Ben running 144.0. You've got two guys that are 143. It's anyone's to play for, really. And I think looking at the timetable, we've got heat, day off, semi-final, day off, final. Some say it could be three quick races, which we all know who enjoys a quick race, don't we? But no, I think look, it could be all three Brits could easily get to the final.
Yeah,
they've got the chance to. They're quick enough to. They're strong enough to, and they're talented enough to. So yeah, it'd be interesting. I feel like they all could get to the final.
I think it's a good take, and I think that's just where mid distance running is in this country. That you kind of know if you do get on the plane to a major championships,
you know you're one of the best in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Ethan, great to chat to you. Let's wish you best luck to make sure you're on that plane next year, mate.
Cheers. Thank you very much, guys.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.